Totally Football Show. Title race cancelled by company's strike action, and suddenly it's all over. City set for the title, Cardiff down, and the top four dithering all but done with draws at the Emirates and most disappointingly between Huddersfield and Man U. No wonder they're going down. Still, at least we've got two wide open completely in the balance Champions League second legs to look forward to. It's all coming up in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hey, listener, it's late on a Monday and your Totally Football Show joins you straight after the final whistle of an extraordinary match at the Etihad where Man City have just beaten Leicester 1-0. Witnesses to this, between fingers, Sasha Gurionov.
Good evening, James.
Hi to you, Sasha. James Horncastle also here.
Hi, James.
And Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Man City won Leicester 0. Vincent Kompany, because they'd tried everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't looking likely for City at that point. Leicester were, I think, looking more likely to score on the counter-attack. They had a couple of very good chances. And we didn't expect that from Kompany at all. I mean, I can't remember seeing him ever score from long range. I think you've got the stats on it.
Well, Duncan Alexander pointing out he's had 37 shots from outside the box in his Premier League career. That was his first goal.
And Jan Arge Fjørtoft, who was watching this on Norwegian TV2, they said the last time that Kompany scored outside the box was against Brann in 2007 for Hamburg, not the three-eyed Raven James. Brann from Norway.
Nice. Sasha, good to hear you laughing.
Yeah, trying to pick up my jaw and my heart off the floor. But I think Leicester lived up to Liverpool fans' expectations there. I think they made it a very difficult game for Manchester City.
What, in Brendan Rodgers kind of throwing away a Liverpool title again? In that sense,
I think he did his best there to get himself a statue in Liverpool. He's not going to be getting one now. But I thought Leicester played it quite smart. And interestingly, how they soaked up the pressure in the second half of the first 15 minutes, didn't leave their half. And then that break with Harry Maguire. I must say, quite unlikely potential hero, but unfortunately, Madison's decision-making let him down. But, you know, if any goal's going to win the title, I don't think you can really script a better one, to be honest.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. And no disrespect to Brighton, but City have now already done their lap of honour.
To be honest, I've seen Brighton this season. I've been decidedly underwhelmed by Brighton. I must say, once the pressure was off, once they stayed up, they played a bit better against Arsenal, a bit more positive. And I think last few games as well, once they got spanked 5-0 by Bournemouth, they kind of went back to basics and started defending better. But I really can't see them show any threat against Manchester City next weekend.
You were at the game at St James's on Saturday, Sasha, which must have been... That must have shredded your nerves. And then to follow that up with that 70 minutes of goalless football tonight...
To be honest, the nerves have been shredded on a regular basis in Liverpool games for the last couple of months. All those late winners, almost accidental goals, like the winner against the Spurs... some brilliant strikes by Salah. But what we saw at Newcastle was a very typical, I think, Rafa Benitez performance. Very organised. You could, like, we were in the upper tier. That's where the away end is. And you can see the tactics in front of you. And it was a very organised 5-4-1 in defence. And Atsu went forward very well. I thought they opened up the flank for Richie extremely well as well. And they were also very, very hard, that Newcastle team. They were certainly not shy of any physical challenges. And, you know, when Salah was getting carried off towards the end of that match, I thought that was it. Liverpool couldn't really play football after that. And the only way you could see a goal coming was a set piece, which was somewhat fortunate for Liverpool. The celebrations were certainly wild. The next 12 minutes were certainly very long. But I think a lot of Liverpool fans are recognising there's nothing much more Liverpool can do here.
No. Saturday it was Origi, who's almost as unlikely a goal scorer.
Well, tell it to Everton fans as well. I think the way that free kick was constructed was pretty epic as well, when Van Dijk was eventually told Shaqiri to take it. And that game was the only way that Liverpool were going to score, was from a free kick. I thought it was quite interesting. Match of the day, they kind of went from the Origi goal straight to the final whistle. Tell you what, those 12 minutes were very, very, very long. Right.
I think what's astonishing about this is that usually title races come down to bottle. And yet you can say that neither of these teams have bottled this in any way, because Liverpool to come back in the way that they did, well, to just keep going against Newcastle. And you look at City tonight, City have had a long time to kind of think about that over the weekend and sort of get jitters. And we did see that it got to a certain stage in the game where in all their other games at the Etihad they'd scored, and tonight they hadn't. And again, just to find a way somehow, improbably. It's kind of from a mental perspective, both teams, you really do have to take your hat off to them.
There's a lot that is inevitable almost about Man City winning the title, but to do it in that fashion is the twist perhaps that people had been waiting for. There's that great replay of Company Strike, which shows a bunch of fans actually walking up towards, I don't know, to go to the bathroom or whatever, because there's no way anyone anticipates Company doing anything. What we'd expected him to do was go out and get booked, bring down Vardy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he did it on Maddison, which was an interesting twist in the first half. And he did worry for him, especially because Vardy loves sprinting to that inside left channel. But it's interesting, James talks about the bottle there. And it's a word used a lot at this stage in the season. But maybe we judge bottle too much based upon the results. I mean, I think City have looked incredibly nervous against Burnley. Got one goal that just about went over the line. I think they looked a little bit running out of ideas tonight, and Kompany blasts it in from 40 yards. So I've actually been more impressed with Liverpool's mental resilience than City's. I think tonight could have gone a very different way had Maddison not shot.
Also
when
Kelechi as well at the end, where he had a more presentable shooting opportunity because the ball,
the end of that extraordinary Harry Maguire run,
exactly, and didn't even hit the target. And yeah, I think again in the second half Leicester did have two very good counter-attacking opportunities, which luckily for City they just didn't take.
Well, they never got the ball to Vardy, which I think would have been interesting had he had his chance, as one of the deadliest exponents of that particular footballing art. But what goes through Kompany's mind then when he, a man who almost never takes a shot or certainly never succeeds with a shot from there, with 70 minutes already played of a game that is absolutely crucial, the title perhaps slipping through their fingers, decides, no, I will now absolutely leather this in?
Well, it's difficult to know, but you sense it's a little bit because he probably felt City were running out of ideas and they weren't creating much. So, you know, David Silva, I don't think, had a particularly instrumental game on the ball. Foden
was
okay.
Quiet for a lot.
Aguero was quiet. Sterling, we didn't see much from him. So it was almost like this is the only option. And to be fair to Kompany, and I've been repeatedly critical of him over recent years, but he has got this kind of ability, maybe a little bit like Didier Drogba, to kind of bounce back from iffy seasons to provide massive contributions, because it was his header against Manchester United in, I'm pretty sure, the same day in 2011-12, in the sense it was the last Monday before the final weekend. He scored the winner 1-0 win there, which kind of got overshadowed by the Aguero moment, but he does score some big goals.
Cometh the hour, cometh the Kompany, I like to say. Was it almost a relief when it went in, Sasha?
No. No, the only sentiment, I think, for me was A, wow, and B, wow, this is disappointing, isn't it? But I think another indication that City were running out of it and getting a bit nervous, there were two or three really sloppy passes in the few minutes before that Kompany shot. And I think if you look at the context of the game, it was almost that had to go in because, you know, when Kompany starts shooting, you know you've run out of everything else, I think. Fair play to him. I think he was in tears there on the pitch towards the end. And the emotions coming through his mind at the final whistle, I think it must be absolutely extraordinary. Fair play.
This is a player whose City career, I think, has been judged over on more than one occasion in the past.
Yeah, I mean, they've continually brought in younger centre-backs. They haven't always worked out. John Stones hasn't had a great season. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if that was his last home game for City, to be honest, Kompany. You know, a guy who's really badly struggled with injuries. Also, clearly, a guy who's got, you know, a very intelligent guy who's got a lot going on in the rest of his life that, you know, he might have other ambitions. I mean, you're not going to go out in a better way than that.
Well, Brighton at the weekend for City, that's down near the coast. Is that right, Sasha?
Not quite on the coast.
While Liverpool will be hosting Wolves.
And after that Leicester defeat, actually, the Wolves have now guaranteed themselves seventh place.
Okay.
So they have nothing to play for, officially. I still expect it to be another tough game for Liverpool because, as we've seen, Wolves really motivate themselves for the bigger clubs. I was almost surprised by the result at the weekend when they actually managed to beat Fulham 1-0, because that's the sort of game they don't seem to care about that much. But again, I think against Liverpool, one thing I shouldn't be underestimated as well, you know, I think football clubs do love to spoil a party or a potential party. So I think Wolves would give it all to actually prevent Liverpool from winning.
Which, of course, Newcastle did at the weekend. And we should just salute their level of industry as well. Anyone stand out for you in particular from the Magpies?
Rondon was absolutely astonishing. Like, really incredible, the way he absolutely terrorised, mostly Lovren, but Van Dijk as well. Any ball going up to him, He was just comfortably holding it up. He was barging opposition players out of the way. His finish was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely leathered that ball in. There's no chance. I think there was some sort of complaint, potential offside. There's no way Alisson is saving that, even if he's anywhere near that. And I just thought his application was extraordinary. Klopp after the game said as well, is there some sort of history between Newcastle and Liverpool? Because he commented on the fact that the whole place was so up for it. Right. Maybe it's the fact that it was Saturday night kickoff, people had the time to prepare. But at 2-0, St. James's Park was going absolutely nuts. It was just, you know, we were almost going deaf. You know, all this talk of maybe Rafael Benitez potentially letting Liverpool do it, nah, it's none of that at all. And I think for Liverpool to come through that test again is another test to their... character, and this is what Klopp now keeps commenting on almost after every game, because this genuinely a team that doesn't give up at all. And you know, that moment when Salah is there on the pitch, yet another moment I think this season when the players on the pitch had much more belief than the fans in the stands.
All right, well, Wolves coming up at the weekend then. Before that, Barcelona.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Thomas McCarthy asks, what are the chances of a Redmontada for Liverpool? They did have that epic second leg comeback, says Thomas, at Anfield against Dortmund in the Europa League a couple of years ago. Lovren scored the winner, and if I recall correctly, maybe he is the talisman. Thomas then later writing in to say, I just wanted to say Redmontada.
Fair.
Well, Barcelona will be coming to Anfield, Sasha. As will you. You're heading up there for the game.
Heading up there tomorrow.
Liverpool 3-0 down from the first leg without Salah, without Firmino, no Naby Keita. Barcelona rested all their players at the weekend, having already wrapped up the title. One Barcelona goal will mean that Liverpool will need five, and Barcelona have only conceded one goal in eight fixtures before the weekend when they rested all their players. So
visits to England this season have been pretty memorable, well, at least particularly when they played Spurs at Wembley, but they obviously won at Old Trafford against United as well.
I think if you, again, seeing this, the team that was finishing for Liverpool at Newcastle, I think one thing that was noticeable was they were beginning to tire. That was just 3 days after Barcelona. Again, this was a massively draining game. 3 days later, you face Barcelona again. And unfortunately, without Firmino and Salah, there just isn't the attacking structure there to score all those goals. I mean, for example, okay, we saw last season that Barcelona blew a 4-1 lead against Roma, and then Roma came to Anfield and conceded five. But... Yeah.
That means that if Barcelona can lose to Roma like that, and then you guys do Roma, then
that guy Salah was playing, and that was the optimal Liverpool team. Interestingly enough, Liverpool's goal started raining in after Oxlade-Chamberlain did his ACL. That maybe changed the structure a little bit, and Liverpool absolutely steamrolled Roma. But I get the feeling now that physically, probably more than mentally, I'm not sure Liverpool will be able to maintain the pace. You saw the pace in the first game at the Camp Nou. It was absolutely extraordinary how football can be played so quickly. And the first 15 minutes of the second half at the Camp Nou, I thought the pace again of Liverpool play was absolutely out of this world. And I just cannot see them keeping this up at Anfield, which is something that would be required if they're going to stand any chance.
Absolutely no chance, Michael?
I think if the front three were fit, you can see that happening. But with the injuries, I can't imagine.
How will they line up, do you think? What, Origi with Sturridge and Mane? Or will Shaqiri be in the starting lineup?
I'd guess Origi and Sturridge.
Right.
And the thing is, with Sturridge as well, to keep up that pace for the whole game, you could see Sturridge early on at Newcastle. Like, he played the magnificent ball to Mane. He obviously played a key part in the second goal. But a loose ball he tried to chase, I think maybe 5-10 minutes before halftime, he couldn't move. And I was surprised he stayed on the pitch, because second half, you could see he's still intelligent, he's still a very good player, even though he did miss the chance to make it 3-1, but he just can't run.
Actually, having said that, Firmino was out first leg and he played Wijnaldum in the front three, so maybe I think that was probably a kind of pressing-based decision, wasn't it? He wanted someone who could work, so maybe Sturridge will be on the bench, actually. I take that back.
Klopp's comment after the first leg, I don't know if we can play much better than this, and they still lost 3-0. Have you got any rays of...
Well, he was speaking whilst we were watching the City game, and I think his sentiment is spot on, which is there's hope and it is football. Two of the world's best strikers are not available tomorrow, and we have to score four goals to go through in 90 minutes. That is the plan. Just try, and if we can do it, wonderful. And if not, fail in the most beautiful way.
What a manager we've got there, Sasha.
When people talk about inverted commas cultural fit, there couldn't be a more perfect man for the job. I think It will be interesting to feel what the crowd is like tomorrow. Are they just defiant in the face of, you know, inevitability? Or are they down after today's result, after the first leg? I think the crowd could make a huge difference. And I think sometimes maybe it's just worth going crazy and just not believing in anything logical. And I think, if anything, before the City games in the Champions League last season, I think some people on City side kind of laughed at this whole idea of Anfield atmosphere. And Liverpool fans and players turned it on. But I just think this is a bit too much.
I mean, you'll enjoy your trip there anyway.
I completely enjoy my
trip. You'll be seeing one of the best teams in the world. Well, two of the best teams in the world. But one that you don't often see. And, of course, Leo Messi. Here's a quick question from Johnny, who says, what is the worst team that could win their domestic title with the sole addition of Messi? Like, how far down the table could you go before just adding Messi wouldn't win you the title? For example, in the Premier League, if you add Messi to Wolves, are they going to win the title?
Probably not, because the level of competition is so high. But maybe the equivalent
Arsenal? Arsenal with Messi, could they win the title?
Well, maybe the equivalent in Germany, where there's not a genuinely great team at the moment.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if you think about adding Messi to a team, where would you put Argentina? Because they keep on adding Messi to that team.
Yeah,
and it keeps not succeeding.
Fair point. There you go. Liverpool's clash with Barcelona. One half of the Champions League semi-final second leg picture. The other one involves Spurs. We'll talk about them after this.
Here at Paddy Power, our trendy new advertising team told us we could record the advert for Liverpool's second leg versus Barcelona, even though we're recording the ad before the first leg's been played. So, Liverpool had a big loss with a huge contribution from Messi. Yeah, they were right. Seamless. Anyway, get money back as a free bet if Messi scores in 90 minutes against Liverpool in the second leg. Selected markets only applies to goals scored in 90 minutes. Applies to first bet on all losing goals, score a correct score and what odds Paddy bets on the match. Max refund £10 as a free bet. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Champions League second leg. On Wednesday, we'll see the action at the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam as Spurs visit Ajax. Ajax warming up this weekend with a 4-0 win over Willem Twee in the Dutch Cup final. They're on for the treble. That's their third clean sheet in four outings. Spurs, by contrast, went and lost 1-0 at Bournemouth with two players sent off, prompting the question, Michael Cox, is this the classic Spurs end-of-season blow-up? And if they melt down like this away at the Vitality Stadium, as you yourself were asking on Saturday, what's going to happen to them in the cauldron of the Johan Cruyff Arena?
Yeah, it was very strange. I mean, their record away from home is dreadful. I think they've lost 7 of the last 8 away from home.
9 of the last 10. But probably also 7 of the last 8 on the
exactly.
way to that.
Yeah.
At that point, it was quite amazing. I think it was the best one in the country.
Yeah. It was a remarkable game to be at this, because obviously everyone will have seen the highlights and how Spurs lost their heads. But it was the most kind of placid, non-threatening atmosphere you could ever wish to find at a football game. It's Bournemouth, like, nice trip down to the seaside, 12:45 kickoff, a team who's got nothing to play for, who were giving out end-of-season awards on the pitch beforehand. And it seemed like it was going to be such an easy game for Spurs. And then they really just self-destructed. It was remarkably unexpected.
First to go was Son, which we didn't see coming.
No, the last player you would expect to get into trouble in that way. I think he was provoked, wasn't he? I think he was stamped on his hand, and there was an incident beforehand. But yeah, completely unexpected. And then Pochettino. I mean, Eric Dier was lucky not to have been sent off before that. Alderweireld was on a yellow card. So Pochettino actually took them both off to avoid going down to 9 men. And then Foyth comes in with, I mean, it's not the worst tackle I've ever seen, but it might be the most blatant red card I've ever seen. It's like he lifts his leg as he's sliding to ensure that it's a red card. And then the remarkable thing from there was that I thought Bournemouth were absolutely dreadful in the second half. They created nothing aside from one chance from Mousset when he came on. But Spurs looked more likely to get a goal on the counter-attack. But the thing that was very obvious there was the players were absolutely knackered. It was the worst possible preparation. You know, it was, in the end, they didn't even need to win this game. But you think if Pochettino could have just shaken hands on a 1-0 victory at half-time and just saved the players, you know, running around for 45 minutes, chasing two extra players.
He didn't have to play for 45 minutes. I mean, essentially rested himself there.
Extra so. Rested. You mentioned Spurs with all the chances they had, but they were thwarted by Bournemouth's keeper, who didn't even have a Wikipedia page.
It's quite a specific criteria you need to have a Wikipedia page as a footballer. You basically have to have made a senior appearance at international level or youth international level or club level.
Oh, no, I didn't. There were rules about it.
Oh, yeah, it's very strict. So as soon as he played in this game, he automatically, someone would have created a Wikipedia page for him. And he was excellent. He was man of the match, made a variety of excellent saves. I'm sure Sasha would be a better placed than me to point out. But the weird thing was he wasn't even the main story in the end, because it was all about Tottenham self-destructing, but right. He was excellent.
Mark Travers, who's the Ireland youth keeper, who apparently, on his debut for Weymouth, on loan from Bournemouth, did you see this, scored a goal. Not really.
From about 80 yards.
Really?
Yeah, it was one of those. There's two very different types of goalkeeper goal. I prefer the long clearance that just nestles in the back of the net. Right.
Was this a goal kick that bounced over a defender, the goalkeeper misjudges it, and it goes in like that?
I think
it was straight in, actually. I don't think it was a bouncer. A bouncer, I always feel like, I just feel sorry for the opposition goalkeeper, whereas this was just a pure hit.
Okay. Sasha?
I actually think this is massively important for Bournemouth, because obviously Boruts has been struggling. Begovic has not had a great season. So to have someone emerge at this sort of dead end of the season with potential of being number one next year, I think is very, very, very important for them. I also think that the Dutch have done something very, very sly here, which I don't think has really been picked up on. Everyone is talking about their round of games being moved to the end of the season. But interestingly enough, they could move the whole round of games, but they couldn't move one match, the cup final. Thereby, they gave, I think, Ajax 8-game gap and also preparation for the first leg. And I think this made such a huge difference, for example, in the first game, where you could see that, all right, Pochettino got the system wrong, but also Spurs couldn't move in the first half, and Ajax basically walked around them. And the game they had on Sunday in the cup final, it was at walking pace. It was a training match. They're so much better than Willem II. So I think for them, their federation has created the perfect preparation for this particular semi-final, whereas, as you said, Spurs are basically a run into the ground. I think potentially one of the reasons these red and yellow cards come in, basically players are just fatigued mentally and physically. And as I was watching the sendings off, it really made me think 3 years ago when they completely imploded at Stamford Bridge, right, at I think also penultimate game, which handed the title to Leicester. But yeah, their judgment completely went. But one thing I would say as well, credit to Lerma, because, you know, Bournemouth are seen as a nice team, and they brought Lerma, who just spends a lot of the games just trying to wind up his opposing numbers. I mean, I've seen him try to do it to Fabinho. He picked up yellow, and Fabinho had retaliation for yellow as well. So in this particular situation, to wind up Son, I think it takes quite a bit.
Absolutely. Son then, as you say, James, getting an extra half of rest ahead of this, and Spurs hopes pinned on him as they head to Amsterdam to take on an Ajax side who have only lost once at home in over a year. That was to Real Madrid. And even that was a little bit...
Very unfortunate.
Very
James.
Unfortunate. An Ajax side who've averaged over 3.5 goals a game since knocking Real Madrid out of this tournament. We didn't do well in finding rays of sunshine for Liverpool. Any greater hope for this?
Son, I think, is the main factor. He's obviously had even more of a rest than he would have liked. But no, I think Ajax will go through. I just think Ajax are absolutely brilliant team. I think they're probably the best team left in the competition.
I also think of just how composed they've been throughout this competition so far, where they've either come back from losing first legs or they've come back from behind in second legs, as we saw in Turin. Kind of remarkable maturity for a side that on the whole is young but has experienced players in defence, midfield and attack. And I think the atmosphere as well, the Amsterdam Arena is great. I was there for the Juventus game, and it is a loud atmosphere where you can sense that not just one generation of fans, but several generations of fans feel that this is a moment that doesn't come around often. And I think that does really make an impact. They just seem to be so fresh, so agile.
So clean.
Not just because the Eredivisie moved this round of fixtures, but because, you know, they have been quite fortunate in that all their best players have been able to stay fit and go into this tie. And Erik ten Hag has all of his best players available to him. Because, yeah, even mentally, I mean, they're in a title race where they're level on points with PSV at the moment, 80 and 80. That over, when you get to May, can be mentally fatiguing as well. So I think you still have to, you know, it's a fantastic story.
Ajax.
Perhaps a small area of sunshine. They did have one major failure in the winter where they managed to lose, I think, 6-2 to Feyenoord.
Oh.
After which they pull themselves together and they're playing, and maybe there is some chink in that sort of mentality armor that they have. But I think one of the great enjoyable things about watching Ajax is their appreciation of time and space on the pitch. Against Willem again, they scored one of those beautifully geometric goals where everyone seems to know when they need to move, and you can draw these beautiful triangles and squares around the pitch, how they pass the ball into the net eventually. It's wonderful.
The idea of a final between them and Barcelona for the neutral is not necessarily an unpleasant one. As for Spurs, whatever happens, it does look like they've got top four, and given the parameters within which Pochettino's been working, that's pretty impressive stuff, no?
Yes, I think he's done a really good job with a squad that's looked really depleted in recent weeks, and I think has massively constrained him tactically. There's a lot of selections where you think, why has he played that formation? And then you realise it's just because he's got about 12 fit players, and one of them is, you know, Ben Davis or Eric Dier, who he doesn't want to play. I don't mean that in a rude way, but yeah, he's struggled for numbers, but they've done a really good job.
Came across as rude, I have to say.
Yeah, well,
some real shame.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Dier's had a bad season, hasn't he?
Not the best. Okay. Alrighty, we'll move on then. But I just want to ask Michael about your tweet. Surely there is no more on-brand Premier League programme than the one you get at Bournemouth Vitality Stadium. Why is that?
There was a double-page spread that was... one page was a advert for local retirement homes, right, which I enjoyed. And the other was a fan giving his top five away day peers. As in the, yeah.
Things that jut out into the
structures into the sea rather than anyone with that name.
Brilliant. And what was number one? Did you...
He's gone for Southend's pier, which he says is the longest pier in England. And for me, that's a good enough reason to have it number one.
Right. Quality and quantity. After this, we'll talk about another stellar weekend from the top four contenders. That's right. They were trying to get into the top four. But once again, the quartet could only muster a single win between the four of them. Spurs, we've already heard, losing away at Bournemouth. Arsenal had that 1-1 draw with Brighton. They could still catch Spurs, but they'd need results to go their way in an 8-goal swing, so no. But they also could still get in via the Europa League. More on their clash in Valencia a little bit later on, Michael, because you're on your way to the Mestalla. Chelsea were the team that actually won 3-0 over Watford, which confirmed them in the Champions League next season, while Man United's Champions League ambitions ended thanks to that 1-1 draw at Huddersfield. A team who had lost 22 of their past 24 games, but who almost won this match. What an extraordinary performance by...
Manchester United. Yeah.
I mean, it's quite remarkable that United have gone to Huddersfield twice in the last 2 years and have been unable to win there. It's just astonishing given the amount of investment in that team. And again, as we saw, well, we've seen all too often in recent weeks, but particularly against Everton, just the basics of the game, you know, whether it be defending a throw-in, in this case, it's just a goal kick.
Hoof.
It's a hoof of the ball, of the pitch. And Luke Shaw just, again, I mean, what is he thinking there? It's just, again, goes to show that I think the culture at that club, the attitude, it's all wrong right now.
It's not a team, said Gary Neville.
But United were pressed into an error that gave Huddersfield the one-on-one. I mean, it's just extraordinary. I mean, this is the Huddersfield team that went to Liverpool. It was the most comfortable game Liverpool have had in about 3 months. Yeah. I mean, they have been hopeless all this time, and I can't understand how United coming out for this game, I'm not thinking, let's apply ourselves, we're really close to the Champions League. Instead, they're playing like the season is over.
We've got to beat Huddersfield and Cardiff and kind of, you know, at least give ourselves a chance that way.
Almost the two easiest fixtures you could have.
Yeah.
Did they look committed to that?
Not really. I mean, even Pogba, when he hits the crossbar at the end, he should be scoring that. It's an easy chance. He has loads of time. I mean, they did have a one-on-one towards the end. There was a little bit of a flurry, but it was just, what have you been doing the previous 85 minutes, lads? I just find it just looks so unprofessional. And this is interesting because, like, the first 10 weeks under Solskjaer, they really went out for it, flying, really committed. Everything is going reasonably well. And as soon as things got a little bit difficult last few games, they just can't get out of the shot. I mean, they won, what, one game in six? Yeah, I mean, they're getting outpressed by Huddersfield.
What about Alexis Sanchez?
Well, he doesn't look any better. I mean, it was a surprise that he started, really. I think Solskjaer maybe could have used a younger player. Funny thing about Sanchez is people keep on saying, oh, he must be one of the worst free transfers ever. Of course, it's not a free transfer because of his wages. But it's also not a free transfer because it was a swap deal. It involved Mkhitaryan going the other way. Mkhitaryan was bought for about £30 million. They probably could have got at least half of that for him. So they effectively did spend money on Sanchez, and he's been absolutely dreadful.
Plus, I mean, there's these colossal wages and all the ramifications that they have added to their structure.
And they won't be able to get him off the books unless he goes to China or somewhere, you know, outside Europe, you know, if he essentially wants to take early retirement, because no other club is going to pay probably half that wage for him.
Well, it was a great game for the neutrals and a great game as well for Huddersfield fans. A nice way for them to salute the Premier League, their last home match. And Benzer with the goal and with the corner flag destruction. as you mentioned, 13 seconds after a United corner. This on the final home game as well for Dean Hoyle, who sold 75% of his stake to another long-standing supporter, Phil Hodgkinson. So that's nice. Jonas Lösel with the assist on that goal, which means that he's assisted two Premier League goals for Huddersfield. Do you know who the other one was against?
Man United.
It was against Man United.
It was quite a similar goal to their winner at the same stadium against United last year.
All right.
How many goals has he assisted for the opposition? He's not Premier League quality. He cost them a lot of points.
Are we at Jose was right territory now with Man United?
Jose was right. He was also wrong about a lot of things in terms of how he went about it. But yeah, I would say the analysis that he made of the certain characters in the dressing room was pretty accurate.
It could get worse for Man United. Why? Because if Watford defeat Man City in the FA Cup final, doing a Wigan effectively, it means that they would play in the Europa League group phase, and then United would have to start in the second qualifying round in July, which would mean they'd have to cut short their pre-season tour, ka-ching, because that day when the second qualifying round gets underway, they're meant to be playing Spurs in a pre-season game in Shanghai.
Yeah, this really annoys football clubs, particularly the marketing section. The other thing that really annoys football clubs is the charity shield, because again, that often forces teams to redo their tour plans.
Who will be playing in the charity shield?
Liverpool City.
Okay, so it'll just be the
second place. Liverpool have played this before against, I think, Arsenal, when Arsenal won the double in 2002.
Okay.
But that's not what happened in 1961, James.
Ooh.
Tottenham won the double, first team to win the double in the modern era in 1961. And they did not play second in the league or the runners-up in the cup. They played a league select 11.
Oh, that's great.
And I think we can all agree that that should definitely happen if City win the double or the treble, it would be.
That's brilliant. Anything else about Man United or Huddersfield?
Could I make a slight defence of the teams going for the top four? Because everyone just keeps on saying how rubbish they are. I know they've really not been very impressive.
Two wins in their last 16 fixtures.
It's dreadful form. But when you look at these teams...
Yeah.
Tottenham are in the Champions League semi-final. Arsenal and Chelsea are probably going to be in the Europa League final. Manchester United, clearly not a very good team, but they got to the quarterfinal of the European Cup and only lost to a side who are the favourites for the competition. Which tells you, one, in comparison to what Europe have got to offer, these are actually still quite good teams. And two, the fact that they've got so far means they are massively knackered. So they've been absolutely dreadful, don't get me wrong, but people are saying, oh, why don't you just give it to Wolves and all this? Well, these are actually quite good teams. You go and look at the equivalent... third to sixth in any other major European league. The Premier League teams are much better than these.
Similar stumbling going on certainly in Italy at the moment between the teams that are meant to be jousting for the top four spots.
They also went so deep in Europe.
Yeah. Hey, well, anyway, let's talk about Arsenal and Chelsea's chances of making it into the Europa League final and then winning the darn thing after this. Rejoice, Baku. You're just 90 minutes away from hosting a London derby on Wednesday, the 25th of May. Sasha, you know all about Baku. There's only one direct flight. It goes on Tuesday night, arrives 6:30 in the morning. Getting back's not going to be any easier.
Does it have any great piers?
Well, it has lots of oil just offshore.
Is it a coastal town, Baku?
Yeah, it's close to the coast, but basically all the Azeri oil fields are out in the Caspian around there. So if you like your derricks... Okay. Get yourself out there. If you like your meat, get out there as well. They know how to do their meat in the Caucasus. Plus pomegranate wine, I've been recommended as well. And lovely old city. And also, of course, it's a Muslim country, but they're okay with people drinking alcohol there. So the fans should not worry about that side of things. Okay. However, getting out there, as Michael said, it's quite a logistical challenge. And I think this is something that they might need to look at ahead of Euro 2020 because Baku is hosting quarterfinal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, Liverpool had it hard last year for the fans to get to Kiev. This is a lot further away. I think this is about as far away as you can
it's
go.
It's 4,000 kilometres.
And if you think logistically
as well.
And
then another 4,000 to come back again.
Exactly. But sometimes you think, okay, I'll fly to a nearby city and maybe get the train or something. You can't really do that.
No. Where is there nearby?
Nearby is Tbilisi, Georgia. You can probably get across the border.
Mm-hmm.
You can potentially go via Turkey. You get the
I know
route.
Arsenal fans who are planning to drive.
To drive?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, they're
to see Arsenal play for 90 minutes against Chelsea.
And
I can't think of anything.
I mean, just driving 20 minutes to see Arsenal play these days. I mean,
Arsenal have already been there as well. Or they played Karabag earlier in the season. So fair play to anyone doing both trips. That's a long
round
journey.
I would say for Karabag, I think only probably a few hundred would have gone.
Yeah,
but they might have actually been able to book a flight. Whereas I think the situation now, you can probably go with Turkish Airlines via Istanbul for about 600, 700 quid or something like that. So I think those day trip tour companies might make a bit of a killing on this one.
Okay, well, of course, these two teams have to make it there yet. They've got second legs coming up against Valencia and Eintracht Frankfurt. 1-1 in Germany between Frankfurt and Chelsea. Eintracht at the weekend playing Bayer Leverkusen, losing 6-1.
They got absolutely torn to pieces. Their three centre-backs were caught out at either side by a very rampant and good-looking Leverkusen side with Kai Havertz, Julian Brandt.
Those goals coming in the first half?
36 minutes.
Oh, six?
Yeah, 36 minutes. And then they just get... But they could have made it 10 in the second half. Havertz himself could have had three.
Was that because Eintracht's mind was on their Europa League second leg?
They did rest some players. I mean, for example, I think Rebic made a comeback because he was suspended for the first leg. But Jovic, who is potentially being linked with Real Madrid at the moment, was on the bench, as was... Gacinovic, who's also one of the starters, but it doesn't explain why they were so absolutely appalling at the back. I mean, there were some shifts around, but the way Leverkusen just played around the system, exploiting the spaces down the flanks, was extraordinary, and they completely collapsed.
Do you fancy Chelsea in this second leg?
I would after seeing this. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, Eintracht would be stronger, but this is such a big impact. And then now, right in the mixer for the race for the fourth place, because also they've lost 10 goals, effectively, in goal difference versus Leverkusen, who've now caught up with them, and both teams have two games left.
Wow, good knowledge, Sash. As for the other semi, Arsenal travelling to Mestalla, you're off to this one, Michael. Mm. You'll have noted that Valencia themselves scored 6 goals at the weekend in a 6-2 victory over Huesca.
Yeah, they've had a strange season, Valencia. Kept on drawing at the start of the campaign, picked up now. I'm not sure they're a great side, but this is a really difficult away game. I mean, the Mestalla, that is an intimidating ground. The steep sides, it's going to be a warm evening. The atmosphere has been a little bit up and down this season. Some fans unhappy with the manager, Marcelino, but they'll be really up for this one. I think the third goal that Arsenal scored tips the balance in their favour, and I think they will score in Valencia. The strange thing about Arsenal is they've got this dreadful away record in the league. But then they went to Napoli, and I know Napoli aren't a great side at the moment, but they were remarkably composed and just never had any problems at all. So it's very difficult to read how this one will go.
No Ramsey goals this time, and Arsenal coming off that very underwhelming 1-1 draw at home to a Brighton side who already knew they were up because Cardiff had lost previously at home to Palace.
Amazing how Palace are the ones that keep Brighton up. By not only doing them a favour in this game, but also obviously losing to Brighton in both games that they played against them. So
it's actually Brighton's last win was at Palace.
Mm.
Since then, I think they've only managed 3 draws.
Arsenal, on the 1st of April, were 3rd in the Premier League and above Tottenham. They've only had 1 win in 6 league games since. Andrew Cargill asked, where, if at all, do you think Arsenal have improved under Emery?
No, they've had some good big game performances. I think the winner over Chelsea was very impressive. I think Emery just works in a completely different way from Wenger, and I'm not sure there's necessarily been progress overall, but it was going to be a long-term job. I think it was a 3-year job, really. First year, consolidate, start to change the club. Next year, they need to be pushing on and definitely finishing inside the top 4.
But is there one specific thing? I mean, bringing in Bernd Leno perhaps as a keeper, one thing about them that you think, well, that's better than it used to be?
The way he makes tactical changes has generally been good.
Okay.
It hasn't been a good month for them. But if you remember the first half of the season, Arsenal were never winning at half-time. Then Emery would completely change system and they'd be very good the second half. Wenger would never change system really midway through a game. So that's been one area.
Ironically, I think as well, he finally possibly got the best out of Ramsey, the player who's leaving. Every time I've seen him play, he was very, very effective.
Yeah, there was a nice farewell to him yesterday, actually. He was on the pitch and he's been there 11 years. And he's a player who... came in for some, I think, really unfair stick his first season back after injury, where a lot of fans were getting on his back when he was clearly just physically shattered. And to score
also playing in a role not necessarily his, no?
Sometimes he's often been out on the right. I think he's a slightly difficult player to accommodate sometimes. As Sasha said, maybe it hasn't been so much of an issue this time around, this season. But to score two cup final winners, I mean, he's almost playing in the wrong area. If he'd done that in the 70s, you'd be the most fabled player in the history of the club. But sometimes the FA Cup scene is an afterthought now. But he's provided some good memories. And I think everyone who's ever met him, myself included, interviewed him a few years ago. He's just a really nice, unassuming, humble guy. Not interested in being famous or celebrity. Just wants to get on with his football. And I think he's really suited to Italian football in Juventus. I'm excited to see how well he does.
Such an odd atmosphere at Arsenal at the end of that game, where they not only said goodbye to Aaron Ramsey, but also Danny Welbeck, which was, felt kind of cold. The way it was handled, it doesn't seem right to me. And then obviously Petr Cech's moving on, might be going to Chelsea to take up some kind of directorial role.
A charity single.
Yeah.
With...
Will he be drumming on that?
Yes. I don't know.
With Roger Taylor.
Yeah. I've got to feel that Roger Taylor's probably going to handle the drumming then.
No, have you not seen where they both drum together? They have this jam session.
Oh, nice.
It's
what's
it's
the
quite
track?
Something. Well, it will be Queen. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they're really riffing off each other. You know, you can see it's
wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. But in poignant scenes at the Emirates on Sunday. What about Chelsea and their first season manager? Peter Hatherley says, please, could you show some love to Maurizio Sarri, who, despite all the endless and unfair criticism throughout the season, has guided Chelsea to a top four finish, League Cup final, which they should have won, and potentially a Europa League final as well. Listener, we'll keep this short, because I think we're all bored of the Sarri back and forth. But yeah, he's not done bad, is he?
No, the results haven't been bad at all, but you question whether he has the support of the players or the fan base, and I'd be hugely surprised if he's there next season.
Really? Hugely surprised if he's there next season, Sasha?
I won't be that surprised, but I think certainly a lot of grumbling amongst the fans, but also quite a worrying thing, the drop-off in the second half. And, you know, this time against Watford, they came out and actually won it in the second half. But Sarri said after the game, well, we tied in the first half, but I think they probably lowered it in the second half, talking of Watford, and kind of let us win, effectively, because they have, in brackets, other things to worry about. Yeah, it's questions over players. Questions over Hazard, maybe.
James, you think Sarri will be there next season?
Yeah, because I just think they'll have a real problem attracting a manager when they've got a transfer ban and they've got key players leaving. You know, obviously Gary Cahill would be delighted to see Maurizio Sarri go, having already walked out the door himself. But that was as awkward as the final scenes at Arsenal on the weekend.
Right, Gary Cahill, who came out with comments along the lines of, I've got no respect for him because he doesn't respect players who've won titles here.
Yeah, it's been really terrible for me personally.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm glad that's over then. Now, all the way back on Friday night, just to round off the Premier League weekend, Everton beat Burnley 2-0. That's 5 wins in 7 now for the Toffees. 5 clean sheets in a row at home. Wolves, though, have sealed 7th place pretty much, beating Fulham 1-0. Handing out 20,000 Sin Cara wrestling masks as well. Did you see this, Sash?
No.
Before kickoff, apparently. The game also notable for Fulham. I think Sin Cara was there. I hadn't seen the 20,000 masks. There's a lot of masks. Anyway, Fulham's Harvey Elliott becoming the youngest ever player to feature in the Premier League, coming on at 16 years and 30 days. He only had 2 minutes for the end, but, you know, they all count. And West Ham finishing with a bit of a flurry, beating Southampton 3-0. Cardiff, they are down. Duncan Alexander pointing out that all the teams relegated in the Premier League and Football League this season, 42%, almost half of them, are or have been managed by Neil Warnock. I guess he's managed a lot of clubs. And, here's another tweet. Dave at Tete de la Course says, slightly off topic, but can we have a flip reverse it where Martin O'Neill wins the UEFA Cup in 2003 and present-day Jose is jobbing along in the Championship. Brilliant. Dave actually plots this out for us, and he sees O'Neill taking over the England job and pumping the ball long to Emil Heskey a lot with Chris Hutton.
My counter-narrative to that was maybe Mourinho has a better chance of getting the Barcelona job that way.
What?
Well, because he was part of Van Gaal's staff, he was the translator, and Barcelona always liked to promote boot room guys, people who know it. And obviously they didn't give Mourinho the job all those years ago because from what they saw at Chelsea, but particularly at Inter, they were like, no, he doesn't fit. But maybe if we didn't get to see that all come to light, Barca would say, ah, yeah, okay, Jose, why not?
I actually think of a social impact as 100,000 Scots just staying in south southern Spain, starting the new colony, never returning.
Magnificent.
Niche thing about that UEFA Cup final was the only UEFA final settled by a silver goal. Do you remember them?
Yeah, so the silver goal, you could continue to the end of that period of extra time. Golden goal killed it right then and there. It was sudden death.
Which was a nightmare for public order. That's why it got sort of...
The golden goal?
Yeah, because all of a sudden a game was over and it didn't have a definitive time of end.
Nobody knew that...
Exactly, so all of a sudden police were like, oh, God. People are leaving the stadium. This is crazy.
But the thing is about this, for example, Delas scored one for Greece in Euro 2004. That was in the first half. But this was in the second half, so it didn't actually affect things because you just play till the end of extra time, don't you?
And I thought golden goal was just so massively cruel. Remember, Euro 96 final settled in the first or second minute of extra time by a goalkeeping mistake.
Brian. Okay, well, on the subject of Jose and the Scots, we'll be talking about one or two interesting stories from around other leagues after this. Time for a little bit of miscellany now, as we begin with Man City's women, who won the FA Cup after beating West Ham 3-0 at Wembley on Saturday. Oh, there were 43,264 fans there. But, of course, West Ham supporters, deeply upset by the FA's decision not to schedule, or either them or the Premier League, not to reschedule the men's team's game with Southampton, which happened concurrently, forcing them to have split loyalties. There'll be more chat about that in the Offside Rule podcast later this week. You can also enjoy our Golazzo podcast if you are of a mind to. What are we talking about this week, James?
We talk about the goddess, James, Atalanta.
Atalanta.
We give a sort of, you know, overview of what they've done this season, what they're achieving, which is quite remarkable, but also their history, I suppose.
Yeah,
the good and bad
guys and the bad guys. And they were very much the good guys this Sunday when they went to Lazio down in Rome and picked up their fourth straight win, moving to within a point of third now. It really looks like we're going to see La Dea in Champions League next season, which would be tremendously exciting.
I very much enjoyed the welcome they got back home in Bergamo. It was the 4,000 fans turned up at the airport, flares, everything was brilliant.
Right. It's such a contrast to the scenes at Lazio on Sunday, where the stadium was about a quarter full. The fans had done that thing where they hang all their banners upside down as a sign of displeasure.
I'd rather see them do that with their banners than the ones that they unfurled in Milan.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Andrew's got a question about Atalanta. Outside of Duvan Zapata, is there any talk of Atalanta players joining the Premier League? And what about Zapata himself? Will he come to the Prem?
I think there's a good chance he could come to the Premier League, yeah.
And would that be a good signing?
I think so. I think he's robust enough to play in England. I would recommend anyone who signs him to play him in the kind of right position, right way, which I don't think has happened up until this point in his career. It's also, I think we discussed this with Richard Hughes last year, that if you take certain Atalanta players out of this system, which often makes them look a lot better than they are, you might get a bit of a surprise, an unpleasant surprise. They might
Many
not be able to
have seen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, on the subject of Richard Hughes, there was a good interview with him in that Bournemouth programme we mentioned earlier.
Oh,
and
was
it was all about his role as a technical director or sporting director and how he's basically overseeing the scouting system at Bournemouth. Genuinely really interesting. There's always a question about precisely what they do, and it was a really good insight.
There you go.
Also, I have a question. Is there much remembrance in Italy this weekend, the 70th anniversary of Superga?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it was... It was done very well. There was the Juventus fans. We discussed this on Golazzo. They unfurled a banner honouring the fallen, and on the day of the anniversary, obviously the club went up that afternoon, and Andrea Belotti, the captain, read out the names of the victims. You can go out and see it on social media. It's always something that brings the hairs on the back of your neck standing.
Indeed. In Scotland, mixed week for Celtic. They tied up their eighth title in a row with a 3-0 win over Aberdeen, but they also unveiled a new kit, which has left many fans troubled. It's essentially the same, but it's the green collar, I think, is... I'm guessing that's what their issue is. There are a lot of people don't seem too excited about it. Also, There's talk of Jose Mourinho being their new manager.
Celtic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, did you not see this?
There was a rumour they'd made him some kind of formal offer.
I thought it was just made up stuff.
It might well be, but it's still funny.
Well, you know what? If you're intrigued, and you clearly are, Sasha, I've just heard that the Totally Scottish Football Show is all over that biz. So let's move on to Germany, where, aside from all that Bayer Leverkusen, Eintracht Frankfurt business, Bayern have gone 4 points clear at the top. With two games to go, they beat Hannover 3-1. Dortmund could only manage a draw with Werder Bremen.
They were 2-0 up. Suicide as well. They could have been 5-0 up. They wasted the number of chances. Pavelka, the goalkeeper for Werder Bremen, had quite an inspired game. And on 70 minutes, Roman Bürki lets a shot in through the gate, just through his legs out of nowhere. 5 minutes later, they're slow pushing up. Jadon Sancho is playing, I think, Augustinsson on side. Then Akanji tries to shepherd the ball out, messes that up. He gets hooked over to Pissarro, the evergreen 40-odd-year-old Pissarro, who equalises. And then Werder could have actually won the game. So that was an absolute disaster from their point of view. And interestingly, now their hope lies next week with RB Leipzig, who, of course, are morally wrong in Borussia Dortmund's fans, you know, ideas of what football should be. But this is a very tough game for Bayern. They're going to Leipzig. And the last game of the season, Bayern have Eintracht Frankfurt at home. So
wow.
I think it's long from over.
Two words that stand out for me there, though. Claudio Pizarro.
4 goals this season. He keeps on extending the record of being the oldest player to score.
What are we at now?
I think it's 40 years and 123 days or something.
That puts Quagliarella in perspective, doesn't it? In France, PSG. Did they win? They did not. 1-1 this time with Nice. That's 1-7 in all competitions now for the Parisians. Neymar scored a penalty. Cavani missed one.
So I think it's the very tasty race for third there, which is the final Champions League spot in France, because it is Lyon against Saint-Étienne. And now I think with 3 games left, there's just 1 point in it, because Lyon drew 2-2 with Lille, who might be dragged into this race as well. They're second. While Saint-Étienne won 3-2 at Monaco, a game in which I think they were actually extremely fortunate, because Monaco dominated for large parts of the game and they got 2 fluky goals. But they came out 3-2 winners, and it's down to the last 3 games.
In the Football League, this final weekend, were you across that as well?
Yeah, Captain, there was one bad thing happened.
What was that?
The bad thing was the terrible act of non-sportsmanship that was shown in Plymouth Scunthorpe. So both of these teams, I think, were in the relegation zone. So they both need this win. Home side 2-1 up. The home goalkeeper, Matt Macy, who is on loan from Arsenal, clearly pulled something, so he tries to throw the ball out.
He goes down on one knee.
He shows that he's injured.
Look, I can't do it. And then he rolls the ball as though to put it out. But the opposition player,
Josh Morris, just lobs it back in.
Straight into his net. And they didn't let the other team go down the other end and score.
No, they did not. But Plymouth still got a goal 10 minutes later to win it. But they actually needed another 3, because that's what it cost them in the end. Goal difference.
Right. Okay. Elsewhere in the Football League, Norwich got crowned champions, but they need a new coach.
Their promotion celebrating bus broke down. So they went around on one of those sightseeing buses.
Yes. Oh, nice.
But Norwich is quite scenic, I recommend.
No, I mean, I'm not suggesting they shouldn't have them.
Well, you shouldn't need a bus because the city centre is pedestrianised.
Yes.
Partridge. Good point. Yes.
Thank you.
Survived in League One. Notts County dropped out of the Football League for the first time in their 157-year history. You can hear more of all these stories with Caroline Barker and the Totally Football League Show gang. That'll be up on Tuesday. And that brings us...
Could I just butt in with one last thing?
Please, Sasha.
I think National League Player Final this year is probably up for the most unpopular one. Because, one, on the one side, we have Salford City, who...
I saw their penalty shootout win against Eastleigh, where I think it was Rooney missed the first penalty, and as he missed, he pulled up. So it's like kind of that. It's like
I think it's basically Moneybags Club, and non-league is never popular. But on the other side, we have AFC Fylde, who won 1-0 at Solihull on the same day as their ground hosted Nigel Farage and his Brexit party, 2000 attended.
Good Lord.
As it turns out, David Haythornthwaite, who's the owner of AFC Fylde, is a big fan of the old Brexit. And in February, there was a hoarding put up at the home stadium, which said, No surrender to the 27.
No surrender to the... Sorry, who are the 27?
The EU 27.
Oh, sorry, right, okay. I've been to Fylde, actually, and as you inside the club, there's a kind of a corridor of British greatness with pictures of Margaret Thatcher and other great exponents of that magic quality, which, Sasha, you can only dimly grasp at, that makes British so very special and deserving of understanding from the rest of the world and exceptions and all that stuff.
I'll add it to my list, James.
Yeah. But, yeah, Fylde. Good.
Defiled.
Nice. Time for us to check on the odds on the midweek European Games and more. Producer Ben's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo, and what a show it's been, listener. And it's about to get better because here's Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, enough of the Premier League. Let's talk about Europe. Can Liverpool do the do against Barcelona and go through to the final?
Well, I daren't mock because they've been here before, haven't they? But it's not looking likely. They're the slight favourites to run the night, Liverpool, but getting through is a real long shot. It's 12-1. They summon the spirit of Istanbul and go through. Barcelona are 1-50 to reach the final. So for context, you have to bet £50 to win just £1. That's how sure we are that Barcelona will be in Madrid for the final.
And the other semi is Spurs over in Amsterdam at Ajax. I'm not so confident about this one. What say you?
Yeah, a lot tighter this one, but a similar verdict for the English club according to the odds. Ajax odds on to go through at 2-7, Spurs are 5-2 to proceed. I'm not sure about that though. An early away goal and Spurs are in control of the tie. And this could be potentially Son's last game of the season. He's 6-4 to score any time in a bid to change that.
And finally, Lee, give us the numbers for an all-London affair in Baku for the Europa League.
This one's less doom and gloom for the English clubs involved. They're both heavily odds on to go through. Chelsea look home and hosed, actually, with a win at Stamford Bridge expected. They're 1-3 to do that, 1-6 to go through. While that late third goal in the first leg for Arsenal should make their trip to Valencia a formality, they're 2-7 to reach the final.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. Well, prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. So, you're off to Spain now, Michael.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Very nice. Sasha, you head to Anfield.
Twice.
Oh, because you're going back for the Wolves game?
Yeah.
Nice. And James, you got anything exotic lined up?
No, not after last week.
All right, because you're in Bergamo,
not this week anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to Genoa the following week. And then you're off to Genoa.
Mm.
Okay.
James made a big thing of not watching the Champions League games in midweek.
Yeah, it's true.
Right.
I went to a restaurant opening. A friend of mine just down the road.
Okay.
It's called Amelia, which is right. It's kind of takes its inspiration from
Amelia Hart, the air, aviator.
Yeah. No, from Emilia Romagna, James, right. Which, as you know, is a fantastic region for food in Italy.
The best. They would say.
Yeah.
The Twitter was just full of like, oh, this is a brilliant Champions League game. And James just pops up with, oh, these starters are lovely.
Right. Okay, then. Well, I'm sure a lot of Liverpool and Spurs fans will be flocking there this Tuesday and Wednesday. We will return on Thursday when we'll go all Latin on you with Alvaro Romeo and Natalie Jedra. And also Duncan Alexander out of Wickham. So do join us for that. And then, Michael, we'll see you again in a week. And you, Sasha, you're back for that as well, apparently. Did you know that next Monday?
I didn't know, but I can
say. Yeah, please come along. Daniel Story will be there as well. We're now two shows ahead of us. Oh, and I'm off to Bratislava. I'm here on Thursday because it's the World Ice Hockey Championships and we're doing a podcast for that. So could be interesting. Super. Listener, we'll speak to you on Thursday. Have a great time. Till then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that Calm is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, Calm provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about Calm.